11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. 1 hour away from Danan Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver, joining us. We'll get his perspective on the wide receiver matchup on both sides, right? What will Jamar Chase in that Trent McDuffie matchup be like? And of course, what could Xavier Worthy do in game number two? Pretty high bar he set for himself.
Especially now that trash talk has begun.
That adds to it. We'll get to the trash, thinking of that, of the day here in about 15 minutes. It's not Cam Taylor-Britt, although it could be the trash of the day.
You can make an argument for it.
Got something a little bit different for that. We're also here in about 8 minutes going to get into conference realignment being back, and could it have a trickle-down effect?
This is the saddest version of conference realignment, in my opinion.
I think there's a trickle-down effect potentially, though, so we'll get to that in just a bit. But Ross Tucker, we were asking him about just these two teams matching up a little bit, and at the tail end, just the mismatch that exists. Like, it does feel like versus different matchups prior to this that you could say these teams were a lot closer. And I understand it's week two, and we're talking about the Chiefs winning against the Ravens, and it's 1 week, and it's Cincy losing New England. So you're like, well, duh. But I actually think if you just look at the rosters and you look at the weaknesses that they have in Cincy, I'm not even just talking about, like, losing one game. The Chiefs seem to have an advantage in more errors than maybe they've had in the last couple of matchups.
I think this is the single biggest roster mismatch these two teams have had going into a game. Like, I gave you the stat because it seems like it's been pretty consistent. Anytime Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow have played each other, the game has been decided by exactly 3 points. Not more, not less. Exactly 3 points. A couple of those games have gone to overtime, including an AFC title game. They're close games. They've consistently been close games. But I also think the rosters used to be closer. I thought the secondary for Cincinnati used to be a little saltier. I think their defensive line used to be a little deeper. I thought their wide receivers, especially with no T. Higgins again this week, it appears, we don't know that yet officially, thought their wide receiving core used to be a little bit deeper. Their running game used to be better with Joe Mixon. And so when I start looking at the rosters, if you made me compare every group, you said, all right, where are they better? Quarterback, Chiefs. Running back, Chiefs. Receiving crew, including receivers and tight ends, Chiefs. Corners, Chiefs. Like, Chiefs. I mean, it's starting to get to the point that I used to think that you come into this thing, and if you had the checkbox of 10 positions, coaching, quarterback, tight end, whatever, you go all the way down, that it was like 6-4 or 5-5 or 4-6, depending on the year. These two teams held some very comparable talent and comparable skills. I feel like the Chiefs might check 8 of the 10 boxes this year. That's why I think I'm more confident in this game than I've been in a Cincinnati game for a while, because I just think the rosters are a mismatch.
Yeah, and the confidence level probably in large part is because of the loss to New England. And you're like, wow, it's not just a mismatch, but that's how they looked against a team we think could be have a top three, top five pick in the NFL draft in New England Patriots. That's probably where the confidence more and more comes from for me. But yeah, if you just start looking at the weapons that the Chiefs have on offense going in, and you're looking at their plan defensively, how on earth are you stopping Rashee Rice? Okay, you slow him down, the slants. Okay, we're not going to let him beat us. Okay, so then how are you slowing down Travis Kelce? Oh, we have a plan for that. Well, what about Xavier Worthy over the top? And it's just, that's the challenge.
He said he can only run fast, straight.
That's right, according to Cam Taylor-Britt. So that's the issue. Not to mention, there's still the running game that we haven't even discussed with Pacheco and the success that the Patriots had against them, specifically breaking tackles, you know, yards after contact. So I just think there's a lot of deficiencies on the defensive side. Even if, as we discussed with Jamar Chase, you believe he's still going to go off and get his. Maybe he will. Maybe he absolutely will. I expect Joe Burrow to look a lot better in this game. I know we've talked a lot about him, but of course he's going to play better. I mean, I think it's a given at this point that he's going to play better on Sunday. But is their defense able to keep them in a game with Kansas City? If we all think this Chiefs offense is back to 2022 levels and they're a top five offense again, can Cincinnati, as they are currently constructed, without T. Higgins most likely on Sunday, can they keep up? If it turns out, if you buy it, it's going to even be a shootout. Can they keep up? Like, I think we'll give our official scores tomorrow and everything, but at the end of the game, I could see this still being a one possession, maybe even a backdoor cover. But I don't think with 8 minutes to go in the game, this is going to be a one possession game.
I don't think Cincinnati's going to hold the ball with a chance to go take the lead in the fourth quarter. So I'm in a similar boat as you. Again, this is just goes down to rosters. We talk about this all the time when it comes to the Ravens or the Bills and having to pay your quarterback and the way rosters change. Unless there are some hidden stars in that Cincinnati roster room that just haven't been unlocked yet, which certainly does happen. Happens to the Chiefs, happens to other teams. Tell me where the rosters align. Tell me where Cincinnati is definitively better. Wide receiver one? Okay, yeah, probably, sure, but Rashee Rice might be a 1,200-yard wide receiver. So that gap tightened, too. And wide receiver 2 through 7 right now, who will be on the field on Sunday, is a definitive match for the Chiefs. And so the only argument you can make, and again, the only argument you can make for Cincinnati making this thing a game, typically, in my opinion, this time around, is because what Ross Tucker said. For whatever it is, Cincinnati plays their best game against Kansas City.
You know what it is. It's the rivalry, and it's we joke, but honestly, like
it's their Super Bowl. It's why they're selling tickets to their stadium for people to pay $100 to sit, you know, I don't know, 5,000 of their friends to watch the Chiefs on a jumbo.
Not for a playoff game, for a regular season game, and they're showing their last win against Kansas City in the playoffs.
2 years ago.
Yeah, before the game. So you cannot deny that this is a game they treat way differently, and it's different this time. It's week two. This is not week 17. This is not where we may see these two teams play each other again in 3 weeks. It's week two. The Chiefs aren't a finished product. They're not a finished product, but right now there's not even close. If you want to ask who is more polished as we currently head into week two with 10 days off, a healthier team is also Kansas City. Sometimes, like, even if you thought the rosters were not a mismatch, sometimes you also look like, who's healthier?
Chiefs.
Who had more rest?
Chiefs.
Like, everything is pointing.
That's a better coach.
That might make people nervous because, like, oh boy, this is setting up for maybe so. Drew is dreaming of that happening. I don't think that's happening.
The other part about this, because, like, someone called it a trap game, and I don't want to.
Here we go.
I do not want to get back into the argument about what qualifies or does not qualify for a trap game. You and I went into that once, and we obviously have differing opinions on what that means. What I'll say about this is, you can't ever sleepwalk against Cincinnati if you're the Chiefs right now. You've run into too many heavyweight fights against them. Sleepwalking against a team is what the Bengals did against the Patriots.
Was week one a trap game for Cincinnati, Cody?
Yeah, maybe. I don't want, again.
Was week one that for them against the Patriots?
I said somebody else called this game a trap game. I don't think Cincinnati is even capable of being qualifying under that. But also, what would be the point in sleepwalking against them? Because they didn't do well against the Patriots? You have too much history with this team to go into this game and be like, well, we're just way better than them. We'll just take our talent and walk out the door. I don't think they would ever. I do think that they go into some games like that. I think they'll play way too close again this year. It'll be like
Carolina.
The hell is it, only like a 7-point lead in the third quarter against the Panthers in November? And we'll all just be like, eh. And we'll come in here on Monday and we'll be like, that was stupid and I didn't like it. And it's fine and they'll win and they'll move on. But in this game, because it's Cincinnati and the trash talk that we'll get back to in a minute, they're just a better roster. It's just a better team right now. We'll see at the end of the year if some of theirs develops or the Chiefs suffer more injuries or a million other things. But right now, the better roster is the Chiefs.
We'll get to the trash of the day here in about 8 minutes or so. But there was some big news in college football late last night. It was like, I don't know, 10:30 or so. I saw this initially reporting come out. And then this morning it became official. And that is that the Pac-12 has given it a go again. We all know that the Pac-12 disbanded because everybody left and there was just Washington State in Oregon State. And they had a scheduling alliance this year with the Mountain West. And you might have seen the news last week, which was that the Mountain West and those two schools did not agree to do it again next year.
Why?
Which told you something was up. We now learn what was up.
They were stealing
this morning
teams.
That the Pac-12 has announced they are expanding with an addition of 4 Mountain West schools. So the Pac-12, as it currently sits this morning, or it'll take effect, I guess, in 2026. In 2026, they will have Oregon State and Washington State with San Diego State, Boise State, Fresno State, and Colorado State. What is unknown, though, is that the Pac-12 still needs to add 2 more schools for it to be a minimum requirement the NCAA requires to be a FBS conference. You have to have 8. So who are the other 2? Because just as it is currently constructed, of course, it's nowhere near any of the other power conferences still at all. It's just not.
I don't think it's going to be either.
You know, in if you're the Pac-12 in terms of your branding, the name and all that and cachet, like, this is their only play to stay at all involved. And if you're Washington State and Oregon State, this is your best move right now. If you're Boise State or San Diego State, this is also your best move. So I get why they're all doing it. But does this have any impact? The Pac-12, if I would have told you 3 years ago, heck, 2 years ago, really, 2 years ago that Boise State or San Diego State got an invite, I'd be like, oh my God, this is huge news. I can tell you from working in Boise, this was their dream 10 years ago, Cody. Absolute dream of that institution and fans to go to the Pac-12. It is. I texted with somebody that works out there still and is connected and everything, and they gave a perfect example. They're like, this would be like your high school crush that you thought was hot as hell. You never went on a date, and then all of a sudden you both were 50 years old and you actually went on a date. It's not the same thing. It's just not. She's not as hot anymore. You're not. It's just a little bit different. You're not as attractive anymore.
This is so. I kind of understand why. I'm assuming that this is just like a branding thing. The Mountain West was in trouble because of all the other realignment. Nobody had a home there, and the Pac-12's got a better name recognition than the Mountain West. I don't really feel like this moves the needle for any of these schools that much. This feels like a fleeting attempt to keep a conference alive that should have just died. So instead, the Mountain West will die. But what should have happened was the Pac-12 should have just died. It should have just gone quietly into thy good night. Because the only two teams remaining in the conference were the two teams. That was a full conference full of 12 members, and the entire conference got picked off except for the two teams nobody wanted. Not an ACC, not a Big 12, nobody wanted. And they just wanted them gone, and so what they did was they got what the best property they could possibly target was, I think, in Boise State. And now what they're going to do is pray. They're going to pray, according to these reports, that they can convince the two teams who left for the ACC to stay. They're going to hope that somehow they can bring back a little bit of a taste of the Pac-12. But I'll be honest, it's not quite anything. This bad, because obviously Boise State's, people are going to be offended by this in Boise if they were listening for some reason, or you will because you lived in Boise.
This is the same as
UMKC when they went to the WAC. The WAC was a once proud basketball conference with good teams. Okay. But by the time UMKC was going to it, it didn't matter. The conference has no juice.
I mean, I get
the
what
The Pac-12 has no juice.
I get what you're saying. I get what you're trying to say. I don't think it's a fair comparison, only because with all due respect to your ruse, in the whatever conference it was before, that's not the,
it's the conference right now, the summit.
The Pac-12 obviously has way more history and is a better conference still than whatever that conference is. But I get what you're saying, and it was kind of what I was pointing out, which is, yeah, 3 years ago, this would be a huge shift. That conference is not the same conference anymore, and they have to hope for chaos that this somehow triggers other conferences to try to jump ship. That's the only way ultimately it does. They don't have a meteorites deal yet. They still need to find two more schools.
Right now, it feels like they went from the Mountain West to what was the name of the Mets manager who went back out with the fake mustache on? Bobby Valentine. It was like the Mountain West put on a fake mustache and was like, we're the Pac-12. And you're like, you're just the Mountain West. Well, you're the same level of conference maybe you were before.
With Oregon State and Washington State. For Boise State and San Diego State, there's not a much risk in them leaving the Mountain West and going to the Pac-12.
But I feel like it's a nothing, you know, like it's a negative, a net zero move.
Yeah, it means absolutely nothing because it's ironic. The only two schools in the Pac-2 are Oregon State, Washington State. Guess who a majority of their schedule is against? The Mountain West. Washington State and Oregon State might as well be in the Mountain West Conference. They're not, which is why...
Yeah, but they're taking the bigger name and branding. That Mountain West doesn't carry national weight. The Pac-12 name still does.
I get that, but they're not... It doesn't matter who they can't add anybody that... If they add Cal and Stanford back, it doesn't matter. They're not going to become a Power 4... It's not going to be the Power 5. They're still going to be the group of six. I think what they should do is reach into the FCS to get those schools because they're better off.
That's even bleaker, isn't it?
No, it's not, because I can guarantee you right now that North Dakota State, South Dakota State are better than San Diego State and Colorado State.
Some of those schools don't want to transition up. I think the Mountain West is who might try to actually get some of the FCS schools. But like your Montanas, your Idahos, they don't want to. I ought to just transition down from FBS.
That's why I didn't mention them.
Right, but it's the same. My point is the same though. Like they're FCS schools. Some of them don't even want to transition up. It's not like they will end up.
They like dominating at the level.
That's the way cost themselves money.
That's the way North Dakota State was. They're not winning anymore. They won a national title in 2 years, 3 years. So this is the time for.
That's not that long ago.
Well, yeah, but no, I'm saying this is the time for them to move. Is because the argument 2 years ago was that Golden, that they'd won five straight FCS titles. They're not winning anymore. Why not take advantage of the potential money increase that you get from a meteorites deal? and move up to that level.
The problem with that, though, is I think the Mountain West might be interested in a North Dakota State. I don't think the new Pac-12 will be interested in North Dakota State. Not to mention, it is media rights deal. You just brought that up. If I'm a TV rights partner, what TV Dakota. Market am I getting in North Dakota? What am I excited about there financially?
Well, if it is
market size driven, that's the whole thing.
I understand, but what market is Berkeley?
I mean,
it's not San Francisco.
It's 50 times the size of North Dakota.
Berkeley, they will count the Bay Area. Absolutely, they will. If you've been to Berkeley, you know how close they will count that as the Bay Area market.
How many people are watching Cal?
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Because to me,
we're not trying to compare Fargo to Berkeley or to Bay Area.
Well, if we're talking about Bay Area, it's not comparable. But if we're talking the Valley and Berkeley, Fargo's as good of a market as that.
They're
not able to compete against the Bay Area.
That's just because you lived in this. This is your bias showing.
No,
this
it's
is
not.
Because you lived in a Dakota. Fargo is the 114th ranked television market, just ahead of Yakima. No way it's as good as Berkeley. Like, and I'm not saying
if
like from a city.
We're talking about them
likely.
Being as the Bay Area. Then no, but are they considered Bay Area or are they not considering it? That's my question. That's what I'm asking. Because if it's Bay Area. No, Fargo doesn't compare to them.
I don't know. Berkeley doesn't show up as
I'm just saying, if you're talking about brands that you would like to add to the conference, because it doesn't matter. Why would Cal leave to go to... Why Cal has... The problem...
That's not, I'm not
the
arguing
for the
Pac-12 Cal... I'm arguing the TV market part.
Nobody,
if I were Cal, I would.
There's nobody that the Pac-12 can add that, regardless of market size or whatever, that's going to... Nobody's coming back. They left for a reason. Cal and Stanford are not leaving the ACC media rights deal to join the Pac-12.
Drew,
the Pac-12.
I agree with you on that.
So that's what I'm saying is they might have no choice but to go after higher FCS powers because they've already left the Mountain West. Why not go after Sacramento State, who is ranked in the FCS, and you include the Sacramento market? Why not include North Dakota State, who has won multiple championships, or South Dakota State that's had multiple championships? If you're going to add anybody, why would you not add better teams than what is available to you in the FBS? Because there are none. Nobody.
Because that's not how anybody does it. Everybody does it based on TV market size.
Yeah, but who would you rather have, Wyoming, or would you rather have North Dakota State?
Wyoming.
No, because they would have added Wyoming and not... They would have added Wyoming.
They're not adding either, I guess, is what I'm trying to tell you. Like the
but they have to add two. Who are they?
Yes.
Who are they adding?
Sure. Before they go FCS, there's potential. Why would they not look at Tulane? Why would they not look at Sam Houston State? Why would they not look at Texas State? FBS programs already, and you get the Texas market.
Tulane's better positioned to join the ACC than they would. There's no reason for Tulane to side hop. It would make no difference for Tulane to make the move, in my opinion, because they already are making enough money in the American Conference as they would in the Pac-2.
Look, if the Pac-12's plan is your plan, which is to go get the schools from North Dakota and South Dakota,
then
they might as well wait. They're wasting their time.
They're honestly already wasting their time because I agree with Cody. It doesn't make a difference what they're doing. It makes no difference.
They made the Mountain West the sequel.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
In my opinion.
Yeah, well, with better brand recognition is what they're doing. They basically are, they without having to partner up with the Mountain West, they said, we'll just use our name and likeness and we'll steal your best teams and we'll be the best group of five conference potentially. That's what they might strive for.
Can they
be the best group of five? Can they compete with the American and be
the best group of
five?
Or they're the Sun Belt. I mean, I don't know if they can do that. I mean, they can try.
I mean, I think they can be better than the Sun Belt already with just the six teams they have right now. Long term, not just 1 year, not just talking about today.
I don't think so.
All right, let's get to the trash of the day.
Trash of the day.
All right, this has to do with hotel rooms. Nothing related to Shannon Sharp. I promise.
We already covered that.
We did. Hotels.com.
We'll get back to it, though. I don't want to let that story down.
Hotels.com released Hotel Room Insights report that reveals the most common and surprising items left behind. So I'll ask you what you've left behind in a second, but some of the most bizarre items left behind: a pet lizard, a chicken, a $6 million watch, a car tire. The priciest items forgotten are Birkin bags and a Rolex. 10% of hotels report that guests left behind their dentures, according to the report. Despite efforts like lost and found boxes, some hotel staff have gone to extreme measures to reunite. They have dubbed some workers hotel heroes, with one driving 100 miles to return a passport, another running several blocks to deliver items before a cruise ship departed, and one shopping to replace a teddy bear for a young traveler.
I'll just tell you right now, if I'm working in a hotel and you're leaving behind stuff and not asking for it, it's over. That's up for the staff to decide now. Are you nuts? Who leaves behind a $6 million watch? Like, in the safe at least? Or just, like, on the nightstand?
I mean, look, I've left my cell phone charger. Like, we were just in Vegas in August. I left my Apple Watch charger. All right, I hop on Amazon, and unfortunately, I got to go buy a new $15
charger. So you just let that one go, huh?
Well, I'm going to make them ship a $15 charger back to me. Now, if I left my laptop, okay, obviously, I'm seeking to get that returned.
No, I don't think I've ever... I am far too diligent when leaving a hotel room to leave... I don't remember ever specifically leaving something behind in a room to this. But I'll tell you right now, it wouldn't be a super expensive watch. And honestly, I can't believe these people are running like two blocks to hand off things before a cruise ship departs. That's crazy. Like, that's nuts. They left it. Now, look, I do think that generally speaking, for any lost and found things, what do you think the amount of time it's okay to say... You have time, like, let's say they leave their Birkin bag behind. That's a $10,000 purse. You and I once kept watchful eye over a purse for a designer purse for somebody before later returning it to them. What is the amount of time that you don't ask for your $10,000 purse that it can be mine now if I'm the housekeeper?
I don't think the housekeeper can keep any of it.
They should.
I don't think
it should be like getting
tipped. Housekeeper's allowed to.
What? Then it just goes to auction and the hotel makes more money? Screw that. It should just go to the people who found it.
I don't think the housekeeper can say, I found the purse, and then, like, oh, a month later, the boss comes back and said, hey, they never called for it, so it's yours.
I worked at a restaurant, and one time, underneath a table that I was serving, was a crisp $100 bill.
Much different.
Didn't know if it belonged to the guest before. They were a walk-in table. I gave it to the management, and they said, if this person doesn't come in and ask for this in 10 days, $100 is yours. 10 days later, $100 coming my way.
You have to
admit. So can't it just be, like, 6 months?
You have to admit. The $100 bill is much different than the $10,000 bag.
Well, I mean, it's a financial difference.
Well, yeah.
But coming back to claim it is the same. If they knew they lost a $10,000 bag, there's only so many places you could leave it.
Sure.
My parents taught me the valuable lesson of, like, if you leave your bike in the front yard, you know, they fake steal it for a little bit. So you think that somebody took it because they tried to teach you the lesson of put your things away. This feels like it lands in the same thing. Don't forget your $10,000 purse or $6 million watch. Someone says, I'd say 10 days minimum, then it's all mine. That's all they need to do.
That is the trash of the day. Up next, Chiefs Red Half Hour. Looks like they're not going to have Hollywood Brown on Sunday. So what does that mean for a couple of the other weapons? And we'll get into some of the trash talk that's coming out of Cincinnati.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
At 12:10, we'll be joined by Danon Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver, part of the Chiefs broadcast team right here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for the Chiefs. We'll get his perspective on something we're going to talk about right now, which is what looks like the likely absence at this point of Hollywood Brown again on Sunday. Did not practice yesterday. We'll see today if that's the case, or if you want to have any hope, it feels like he's got to at least be practicing today on a Thursday.
They're not going to have him practice the first time on Friday, then play real snaps.
No, there's no reason to do that. I mean, let's just be real. The offense looked great last week. Your rookie came in and stepped up. You have enough weapons on offense. It's week two for a season where, you know, if you're the Chiefs, you're playing 19, 20 games. There is just no reason to push it. Make sure he's 100%. And that's typically how they've gone about their business anyway. So I fully expect that to be the case. And we kind of all had circled the Falcons Sunday night game in Atlanta as the game that he could be available. And I think that's still where this is trending based on him not practicing yesterday. And if he's not going to play on Sunday, well then, yeah, I think we should expect the snap count for Xavier Worthy to be almost, you know, identical percentage wise to where it was last Thursday.
Yeah, I think that that's probably in line with what it is, but I'm also, that means I'm expecting things out of Xavier Worthy again. Going into the season, I'm always really tentative with rookies, not because I don't think they're talented or I don't think they're good or can only run straight, like Cam Taylor-Britt said, but because they're hard. They're hard to rely on week in and week out. But part of the reason I think they're hard to rely on week in and week out is, you know, there's other players who take priority over it. But last week told me the story. If there is no Hollywood Brown, I am to anticipate that Xavier Worthy is on the field 60 or 70% of the time again. He's going to be above Mecole Hardman, Sky Moore, Justin Watson. Remember, we asked this question going into the year. Where does he rank amongst the receivers? Okay, so Rashee Rice is still ahead of him. Travis Kelce is still ahead of him. When he's back, my guess is that Hollywood Brown is still ahead of him. But damn it, if he's not sliding into fourth, maybe fifth if you include the running backs there. But, I mean, it's right there. And I think that that's what starts to matter here is that it feels like we're starting to get into a range where I've got to count on Xavier Worthy again for this game. Not for 6,000 yards or whatever, but like to go out there, touch the ball 3 to 4 times and get them 30 to 60 yards on the field and ideally get in the end zone. Have to get in the end zone for this to work?
No. But impactful touches, and they certainly were in week one. If he's going to play 60% of snaps and he's going to have, you know, 4 touches, 3 touches, you're probably hoping, of course, that those are impactful. And the way he looked in week one, they're going to be impactful touches. He does not, I don't think he's in his rookie season going to be a guy, unless there's multiple injuries in the wide receiver room, that is going to have, you know, 8 catches. I don't believe that the only candidates for 8 catches in this offense are Kelce and Rashee Rice, in my opinion. Maybe a one-off with Brown later in the year.
But it's random MVS one, you'd be like, what?
But it's, you know, volume guys, that's not going to be Worthy in his rookie season. That's fine. That's totally fine. They're going to have, I'm sure, on Sunday, 1 or 2 plays specifically designed. I don't know whether it's a reverse or a jet touch pass, whatever. Like, there'll be something designed for him, and then there'll be normal, quote-unquote, just normal routes, whether it's and you hope you get a busted coverage again, or he just burns somebody, Cam Taylor-Britt in particular, would be really
nice.
That
would be ideal. You know, I would say that that's the ideal situation. But look, again, I think that what this comes down to is that because what you said, without Hollywood Brown, they actually do kind of need Xavier Worthy to be a part of the offense because he still runs an important job. His job is to help the volume shooters we just talked about. Someone's got to set the pick so that Steph Curry can jack up 15 threes a game. Okay? Someone every time's got to, now in his case, maybe not, but in normal volume shooter situation, you understand the analogy I'm trying to make. And that's what Xavier Worthy does for their offense. What's exciting about if Hollywood Brown ever gets back on the practice field and participates at that level is that now they could have 2 guys, hypothetically, running interference on getting Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce open. They're not going to go 4 wide all the time. But an offensive thing where it's 3rd and 8 and Xavier Worthy and Hollywood Brown are lined up on the field together, one guy gets to streak down the middle of the defense to open it up for Kelce and Rice gets to work solo on the outside. Yeah, I'm going to assume they're going to convert that at some point. But Xavier Worthy still becomes an impactful player. I wonder if this week, you think he's going to get back in the end zone again? Is he just like, well, 1 week it's hard. Is he going to turn into the touchdown guy his rookie year? Been a long time. We've had plenty of guys be successful in Kansas City, get 3, 4, 5 touchdowns as rookies. We haven't seen just that like 8, 9 touchdown guy, rookie year guy in a while. Maybe just has a nose for it.
He could. I mean, with the plays that they can design with that kind of speed, and we saw the blocking that he got out in front on that one touchdown run. Yeah, I'm a little hesitant. Like, I try not to overreact. Like, we're, you know, oh my gosh, there's no way he's not getting in the end zone. Like, I think it's too early to be that. It's got to be multiple weeks in a row where he's just consistently finding the end zone to me, where I would just
start
blindly bet it every week. Yeah. I'm not at a blindly bet anytime touchdown for Worthy week. Course, it wouldn't surprise me if he gets in. I haven't even looked to see his odds in particular. I know a few other players we were looking at off air to get a touchdown on Sunday, like Samaje Perine's 5-1, who I like to get a touchdown against his old team.
Are we at the show bet tomorrow? Little show parlay?
We could.
Pick three?
We could do a little pick three tomorrow.
You already got a bet you like, Drew?
I have to look. I have to look because
the anytime touchdown,
I don't know if it'll be a Bengals sided thing. It might be a Chiefs sided thing, believe it or not.
Right now, Worthy to get a touchdown is +160. You know, it's like, it's not worth for me to do
what's
that.
What's
Perine
again?
It was 5-1 this morning, down to +370.
Okay.
Yeah. He was 25-1 and 5-1. 25-1 first touchdown this morning and 5-1. And now he's 20-1 first touchdown +370. So again, those are 2 bets that I do like. Thinking of the trash talk though, we alluded to Cam Taylor-Britt. He was talking a lot. We'll get to his comments on Worthy, but there's something about the trash talk pregame that now has certainly added more, at least for fans. You know, the players will hear the comments. They'll downplay it today in Kansas City. Typically, unless your name was Justin Reed one time, the Chiefs will not engage in that until after a win, until after a game, which is an Andy Reid thing, which makes a lot of sense. But I'm glad that since he's actually talking trash, because it's brought some more intensity to a week that has been a little quiet otherwise. heading into this matchup. This is their rival. This is the Chiefs' rival. The Chiefs are clearly the Cincinnati Bengals' rival. And you need the hate. You need the disrespect. You need competitive football. And this matchup has all of that historically. That's not something we see with Buffalo as much. One, the Bills haven't beat the Chiefs in the playoffs. The other part is there's way too much respect there. I kind of like Buffalo fans. You know, I can't stand Cincinnati. It's a little bit different. And I know a feeling's mutual on their side. And then you have Cam Taylor-Britt talking.
Damn, I don't even know how to call that. I don't like them. You know, I don't think I like a lot of teams. But, you know, we see them a lot. We see them a lot. And it didn't turn out the way we wanted to our last time. So, yeah, of course, you know, like you said, some guys think about it. I'm not thinking about it, but yeah, playing those guys is always exciting, man. The competition, the guys on their side, they have are good, but we have guys on the side that are just as good, so yeah, it's a good time.
A lot of talking in this game?
Hell yeah, hell yeah. I don't shut up.
How did you,
man, a lot, yeah, a lot. We'll see when we get there, you know.
Do you enjoy that kind of thing?
I don't care, I don't give a damn.
I mean, I can already imagine.
Mahomes gonna send out that tweet with like, yeah. Mahomes 4 touchdowns, no picks, and he's gonna say, I don't give a damn.
I mean, I can already imagine Monday morning what it could be like. It could be a lot of fun because you had him also talking about Xavier Worthy, who's a rookie who has played in one game and has already clearly caught the attention of their opponent.
What does Xavier Worthy bring to this KC offense that you guys need to be prepared for?
That's about it. He can run straight. Run jet sweeps and just run straight. He can't do too much else, so that's about it. But like, you put your hands on him, he's only 100-some pounds. So if you put hands on him, you'll stop the speed. So basically, get hands on him.
He can only run straight, according to Cam Taylor. But that certainly won't backfire at all on
Jalen
Sunday.
Ramsey, did Jalen Ramsey ever regret calling Tyreek Hill a special teams player?
They're teammates now.
I mean, Tyreek Hill's going to be a Hall of Famer. The trash talk to winning ratio for Cincinnati, it's off. Drew, can you defend it? It's off. They talk too much for the amount of winning they do. I'm not saying you can't trash talk. I'm just saying you can't trash talk more than you win. You know, you gotta be like at least equal at best. I would say maybe a little less trash talk than winning, but you know, or winning more than trash talk. But.
Sure, I mean they've gone over 500 the last three seasons, so I think that I mean it's fair for them to talk. And they've had their time against the Chiefs. I mean they can talk. It's not like they can't talk or shouldn't be talking. It's just that the Chiefs can also talk right back in regards to the Super Bowl. So I think Cam was correct in the fact that we lost the past couple we've lost the past couple
he's
times.
He's right in that. I don't like him. That makes sense.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything. Look, and he can say whatever he wants to about Xavier Worthy. It's just that he better not be the one to get burned on the play where he's guarding Xavier Worthy. That would be the thing that I would be thinking is, just don't be the guy that ends up getting beat by Xavier Worthy deep. Otherwise,
it doesn't really matter.
It looks worse.
You burned your own teammate either way. This is again where I agree. Cam Taylor-Britt saying, I just hate him. I feel like when Cincinnati comes to town or they go to Cincinnati, because this is why it's the best rivalry in sports, I turn into Kendrick Lamar. I hate the way you walk, the way you talk, the way you move or breathe. Like, it doesn't matter what you do. If you're Cincinnati, I don't like anything you do. I think Joe Burrow's hair is stupid. I think it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter whether it's about your play or the other side of it. I just don't think anything you do, I'm going to like. Not going to like your head coach. That's what's good about it, though. They got viscera between them. But you had asked me a question before is like, at some point, if Cincinnati stops winning these regular season games, too, and we don't see them in the playoffs as much, they can lose their top spot. They have it for now because they've played in juicier games against the Chiefs and have had more heat between the teams than the other ones. But if they start losing these regular season games and golden top of the playoff ones, well, then it's done. Then they'll get knocked down to second billing for whoever steps up to the plate, like if they face the Ravens again in the postseason, right?
I think somebody from the text line brings up a good point, though, is that Cocky's beat them three times out of the last five games. I think it's part of what gets them up for the game. Not to say that every game would be like the New England game, but they like to convince themselves that they hate this team even more than what they maybe already do by talking trash. It gets them fired up to go out and play. And again, you have to back it up. I think that also is part of it is they like to talk smack because it gets them fired up to play against the defending Super Bowl champions even more than it already would with them
Oh, it definitely so does. Often. I mean, I don't disagree with that. And this is a week of comments that only happens when the Chiefs are playing Cincinnati. Like no mm-hmm. other team the Chiefs have on their schedule going into that game. I don't care if the Texans have one loss going into the December game against the Chiefs. There is no way, I can promise you, no way the Texans that week are going to be talking crap on the Chiefs. And you said it, you're correct. There's some history there. Yes, they've won 3 out of 5, but the Chiefs have won the last 2, and the Chiefs have won 2 rings. So I don't think anybody cares that Cincinnati's won 3 out of the last 5. When multiple of those are regular season games.
Yeah, and the Chiefs have as many rings as you do wins against them in the regular season.
Nobody's going to care about that.
That's the rebuttal, but in terms of head-to-head, look, the Bengals...
They've put up a good fight against them. Cincinnati consistently has.
The Bengals can't control what happens against Buffalo or what happens against the Ravens or what happens against the Dolphins when the Chiefs play, but when we play them...
Well, you guys weren't in the playoffs last year, so Cincinnati can't control that.
Correct.
I mean, you guys weren't in the playoffs last year.
Again, star quarterback was hurt, and they went 9-8. So I think it's
part of the deal, man.
Which they're still going to talk. It's not. I mean, it's part of the deal that the Chiefs won the Super Bowls, and they can flash the rings, and it's fine. I think that in games that they've been able to control, the Bengals have played very well against the Kansas City Chiefs, and it gives them a right to talk. Now, again. They haven't won a Super Bowl, but
games
still,
they
it's
can
not like
control,
they
they've won. Like, well,
that
I mean,
means
that's
nobody should be talking then,
works,
because the Chiefs are winning.
Like, obviously, if I'm controlling a game, I'm probably winning. Like, in games they control, they won. Well, I mean, that's...
I'm talking about them controlling what happens, winning or losing, like them playing in the game. They can talk trash because they feel like they can back it up. That's fine.
Again, it's the best possible rivalry in the sport right now,
by far.
That's because they played in great games. But the same thing applies. The only reason it is because... Joe Burrow is the only active quarterback in the AFC who stopped Patrick Mahomes from getting to a Super Bowl. Boy, they open their mouths the second it gets to game week. Sometimes in the offseason. Remember Jamar Chase on the NFL Top 100? Couldn't even utter his name. He treated him like Voldemort. He couldn't even say, he wouldn't even say his name. Joe Burrow. You could just say Joe Burrow. If you think the number one player in the league is Joe Burrow, go on and say it. This, what's funny is, like, with Jamar, is that I'm fascinated to find out, one, if he gets his deal done eventually in Cincinnati, but if not, who he ends up with, because Willis hate for Mahomes.
He's not going anywhere else. Right. He's getting paid.
I hope you're right. I hope for your sake you're right,
Drew. He will get paid.
Because I'll just tell you, their history of paying people, Trey Hendrickson asked for a trade because they weren't paying him. T. Higgins is leaving because they won't pay him. And
yeah, but you can agree, though, that the Bengals shouldn't pay T. Higgins because of the situation they're in, having paid Joe Burrow. So I think that's is kind of common practice. But look, if Jamar Chase does end up leaving, I back Mike Brown. He's been a great owner in terms of being able to be loyal, and he's been able to adapt a lot into how the game's changed from this 1960s, except for this one thing. And if he can't bring Jamar Chase in, then they have to, I don't know, something has to be done. If he can't bring Jamar Chase in, or is not willing to pony up $30 more guaranteed for his guy, who's the best wide receiver, one of the best wide receivers in franchise history. There's no way
he's got a history of paying it literally one person. It's Joe Burrow. So we'll see.
No way.
At least on this end. Alex, I've invited you a number of times, and I have one final offer for you. And if you say no, I'll stop inviting you.
Inviting me for what?
We're going to play poker tomorrow at the Tap Household.
I'm already out. Can't do it.
Dang. You didn't let him finish.
Now, look, in fairness, he's got plans. That's fine.
I do. Yeah.
But I've invited Alex probably 5 or 6 times. I think he likes poker, but doesn't like it enough to come to my house
to
play it.
That's accurate.
So should I stop inviting you? No more. No one can be like, did you invite Alex, or would you like an occasional courtesy invite?
You do whatever you need to do. I appreciate the invite. You already knew I had something going on tomorrow night.
I forgot. What do you
it's
have?
My other sister's birthday. We're doing
that's right.
Dinner thing.
You guys do a family birthday dinner.
Yes, we're doing a dinner thing tomorrow night, so I cannot make it. But I've heard a lot about these poker matches.
They're just a normal. It's just a normal poker game. There's nothing spectacular about it. Normally a good mix of random friends or media members.
Are you inviting Drew?
I don't think Drew plays poker.
I do not. I
think
tell you
I asked him
poker.
Once, and he was like, I don't even think, like, he might not know what hand beats what.
You did invite me once, and I don't play poker.
The
so
other part
I
of this,
appreciate the invite, but yeah, I think at that point you're like, yeah, I don't need to invite Drew anymore.
The other part of this, too, that Cody has left out
is we do not live close to each other.
Well, that I wouldn't even, true. I wouldn't even bring, I mean,
yeah, that's true. A factor.
The other part, though, and I think where Drew also would agree a little bit is, some of the people that you invite to play poker have played in like the World Series of Poker in Vegas. Basically, I'm not going up against someone that literally doesn't work anymore and plays poker 24/7.
Like,
that's crazy.
No, my game is not like that. A different game that I attend is sometimes like that. That's not mine's a friendlier game. Friendlier game. It's not a bunch of people who've played in the World Series of Poker. That's just a game I am occasionally invited to.
I've never played
in the World Series of Poker.
Not you. Some of the other people that have been there.
Someone says you should open up a listener spot and make it caller 9.
The fact that I don't play poker, probably people who do. The people who play at your house, Cody, probably want me to come and
play. Take his money. If you're going up against somebody like that, you can take everybody's money.
No, I don't want it to be like that. I want it to be a friendly game where you just get to hang out, have a drink, put the Royals game on in the background, you know?
You did invite me. I don't even have to play poker. You just invited me over to the house to hang out while you guys play poker.
New to town, and I just thought maybe you'd want to get out on a Friday night. Like tomorrow, does your wife have to work?
Tomorrow night is Friday night, yes.
Same thing, Drew. You don't have to play. If you want to come and hang out and have beer with some people, you are more than welcome to come.
Are you guys doing the chili?
Well, we'll do that this year, but I'm not. Okay. I'm not making chili.
I know. Bree and I will be there for the chili night when you guys have that.
He'll be back for that one. I got Drew in for chili. Have I ever gotten you to chili?
I got one time. Yeah.
Okay.
Bink said he would go last year, but it didn't end up happening.
Then every year. Nah, Bink. You know, stuff comes up. Bink's good. Okay, I won't see you guys tomorrow, but next time.
What's the buy-in?
It's cash game, so you know.
Okay.
I said a max buy-in for those.
Someone says Drew should be the dealer, just learn how to deal.
And we could tip him, he could make some money. I'm getting Drew a part-time job as a dealer at my home game.
No, but he would learn the game more.
Oh, that's
if he
true.
Was a dealer. Yeah. That's what the
that's
person is saying.
That's a good point.
If someone's saying he would learn the game, if he was a dealer, he could learn the game more.
Fair point. You had asked me about a certain player for coming up in the Chiefs game on Sunday because you've made a point of saying there's a bet you like.
Yeah.
Are you a revenge game guy?
I mean, I don't think kind of sarcastically saying revenge game Samaje Perine. He played for Denver last year. He's a couple years now removed to playing in Cincy. I don't think it's necessarily a revenge game, but I do think, one, we saw last week Samaje Perine had some receiving opportunities, and he had only been with the team for a week. So now he's been in the playbook an extra week, extra 10 days now, and that bodes well. He was inches away from catching a touchdown pass. If he catches that, it was nothing but green grass in front of him. He gets a touchdown, and we're talking about Perine having a touchdown in his Chiefs debut. I think that happens in this game. And yeah, is it cool that also you add in it's against his old team? I do believe there'll be some opportunities, screen game, pass in the flat, where Perine will have an opportunity to find the end zone.
I just think that they have, you know what it is? We talk about this all the time with players, and what I think is already underappreciated probably about what they did with Perine here is I don't care how big of a star you are, how big of an impact you are to the team. I don't care if you play 10 snaps or 80 snaps. Do you know your role, and do you play that role well? That is already, after one game, Samaje Perine. He's going to get one carry maybe. All of his action is going to be in pass protection or catching a pass. And sometimes down near the red zone when it's 3rd and 8 from the 8, 3rd and goal from the 7, 3rd and goal from the 8, bye-bye Isaiah Pacheco, enter Samaje Perine. That's where I think his touchdowns come from. They're going to come from a distance of 5 to 10 yards near the red zone in the passing game. Hell, he should have had a passing touchdown last week. Had he held on to that ball, there was no one in front of him on that left-hand side.
Yep.
So what I like about him is he already has a role. He has a job, and everybody knows his job. And it's not a mystery, or they're trying to guess, or, you know, it is. They're like, how are we trying to use Sky more? No. He has a job. It's established, and they use it well.
He had the 4th most receiving yards of any running back in the NFL last year. And I understand he has Pacheco in front of him. But in receiving, the ability is there. The Chiefs brought him in to be a receiving back.
Pete McKinnon.
I mean, he's going to have that kind of role. So
I wonder if he's going to, if he scores like some soccer players do against their former teams, I wonder if he's just not going to celebrate. He's just going to go off and he's going to go to the sideline. A lot of soccer players do that when playing against former teams.
Does he have a normal what was his thing in Cincy?
I couldn't tell you.
It wasn't like a...
I don't think there was a set celebration that he did every time.
Do they have a Cincinnati one, you know, the Dirty Bird or whatever?
I mean, the Icky Shuffle is a popular one that's been there forever, but...
I'm just asking if there's a way he can,
you know, twist the knife a little bit. That's all. And also,
The
Cincinnati didn't like do him wrong. He's a backup running back.
He was in Denver last year.
I think Joe Mixon would have been more of a, I guess, a revenge game if they were to play Houston. It would be more
they
of a
traded him or whatever.
I mean, I guess did Charvarius Ward feel that way when facing the Chiefs for the first time? Again, I don't know if there was any backlash there.
Skill. I don't know. I've always viewed the revenge thing. We've talked about it more with skill players, like position players.
It's
a quarterback, a running back, wide receiver, defensive end type of thing. Like it's not something we normally mention with like an offensive lineman in his revenge game. I don't know if I've ever heard that before.
Typically, skill positions are corners. Yeah. Occasionally, like a pass rushing defensive end, if they decided not to pay him. If Trey Hendrickson was on Baltimore next year, and they faced each other, I would assume that. You would talk Trey Hendrickson revenge game. He has to be traded. They wouldn't pay him. He end up going against him. I think that would count.
Coming up next here on Cody and Gold, we get to what's trending. And then our friend Danian Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver, going to join us. You'll hear him on the call on 96.5 The Fan coming up on Sunday afternoon. I want to ask him about that matchup with Ja'Marr Chase and Trent McDuffie. How does he think the Chiefs are going to handle that next?